The developing world needs money to help raise its people out of poverty, so surely it's a good thing if that country discovers oil within its borders. But is this really true? Professor Paul Stevens is a senior research fellow on energy at Chatham House.
Common sense and economic theory says it should be true, but unfortunately, when you look at the experience of oil-producing countries and mineral-producing countries as well, generally speaking, they have had a negative experience. This is known in the trade as resource curse. And there are a number of dimensions to this. One is an economic dimension, which means if you get large oil windfall revenues, you get high levels of inflation. High levels of inflation lead to an overvalued exchange rate, and putting it simply, what that means is you import more, you export less, and so it tends to wipe out the traded sector. In the industrialised country, it was manufacturing. In the UK, we had a bad attack of that in the early 1980s. For a lot of the developing countries, it's the agricultural sector that gets wiped out. But resource curse also has to do with politics, with governance issues as well. So, for example, the presence of large revenues will tend to engender internal conflict. We've seen this in Nigeria. We've also seen it in Chad and a number of other oil-producing countries. It tends to entrench existing regimes because they can basically buy off opposition. Also, if a government is getting very large revenues, then it doesn't have to raise taxes in other ways. And if you're not taxing people, you don't have to consult them. So you get into all sorts of problems there in terms of dictatorship and rather nasty regimes entrenching their position.
Is there a way in which you can have these great resources and get something good out of them, or does it just always end up being a bit of a curse?
Well, it's a problem. The general view says that managing windfall revenues is a function of good governance and good institutions. Now, unfortunately, this is a very unhelpful observation because we don't know how you get good institutions. We don't know why some countries have good institutions and some have bad, why bad institutions turn into good institutions. When I say we don't know, I'm talking now about the academic literature. We simply don't understand how these institutions develop. There are a number of countries, they refer to often as the usual suspects, who avoided a curse and got a blessing. These are usually listed as Chile, Botswana, Indonesia and Malaysia. Also, of course, Norway, Canada and Australia. But you then say, well, what do these countries have in common? Well, in all cases, they had a group of very smart civil servants who understood economics, understood how to manage the oil revenues and got on with it. The more interesting question is, why did the politicians let them do that rather than treat the windfall revenues as the trough in which to stick their snouts, which is what tends to happen in most of the countries?
Is there any indication of that, or do you think it really is just almost a luck thing, or even perhaps a cultural thing?
It's always tempting to sort of give a cultural dimension to it. And I think there's a certain element of this. The Norwegian experience is often held up as the great example to follow, which is very unhelpful because if you're going to make the Norwegian example work, the first thing you have to do is start with 6 million Norwegians. And if you haven't got that, it's not going to be particularly helpful from that point of view. There's a lot of evidence to suggest, when we look at the countries that avoided it, that it was a luck element. The country was in the right place at the right time. The leader of the country may have been somebody with vision or imagination. And so there's no obvious magic solution. There's no magic menu that you can sort of put together the meal of success. It is a rather random process.
Now, you've talked about in one of your reports the idea that sometimes a country that has, say, an oil reserve resource decides not to exploit that at this stage. The thinking being, well, we'll want more oil later, so the price will go up and technology will make it easier to extract. Bearing in mind that we still have this issue of having a possible curse, a resource curse, perhaps that's a really good idea. Leave it for a bit, let the country move onwards a bit further, and then take that oil out.
Yeah, on balance, I think it probably is a very wise decision. It has, of course, important implications for the world oil market because it means that we're going to run into shortages and higher prices. There's also a danger, of course, that the consuming countries will eventually get their act together and start to take serious policy measures to reduce their use of oil, which means that there is a danger in, say, 20 or 30 years' time that nobody is actually going to want the oil that they haven't produced today. So it's a trade-off from that point of view. But a lot of countries do take that view, that it's better to slow production and to try and build up capacity so that they can manage more revenues when they appear.
And that sort of slowing of production, does that reduce the impact of the resource curse?
Yes, it does, because by definition, you're not getting as much revenue coming in, and the revenue coming in is a little more manageable because you can decide how much you're going to produce.
That's Professor Paul Stevens.
Interviews from Passion for the Planet.
Copyright Passion for the Planet.
Listen to more interviews online.
Hear health, environment, lifestyle, personal growth, and business experts when it suits you. This service is free. Register now at passionfortheplanet.com.
Find out more at passionfortheplanet.com.